Greetings, this is Amy Suzara bringing you the poetry segment on Setting the Standard, KPFA 94.1. Right now I'm here in the studio with Ramona Webb, who is a performance poet. She's a slam master of San Francisco City Slam. She is an adjunct faculty at Alliance University in San Francisco, and she is also the artistic director of Lyrical Minded 415 and Project Able, which she's going to be talking about in a moment. I'm really excited to have Ramona here because she brings together her roles and her work as both a powerful performance artist and as an educator. And our theme tonight is about how these roles as artists and as educator intersect, how you see them informing each other. Are there any ways in which you struggle with both of those hats? And most importantly, just how you see art as a way to, as a means of educating as well. So why don't we start talking a little bit about Lyrical Minded? Tell us a little bit about what you guys do and what's important about this work.
So Lyrical Minded and Project Able, which is Art-Based Learning for Equity, is a art-based curriculum that we implement in Title I neglected school sites throughout the Bay Area. And when, by Title I, I mean group homes, lockdown mental health facilities, and orphanages. And then we are a collective of teaching artists that come together to do this work very specifically in this population, which we feel is one of the most underserved populations and overlooked. We want to make sure that all children are able to experience art in an art-based learning capacity as possible. And we think that it's a really powerful teaching method that we've had really great success with, especially with, you know, youth that people would sometimes describe as having, we don't use words like disability. So we say we'll have cognitive differences or behavioral differences. It seems to be very effective for them and in that particular population.
Can you describe what is art-based learning?
So it's just learning through the arts. So as opposed to teaching math in a very standard way, you know, textbook, maybe we'll teach it through beatboxing or drumming. You know, we're teaching poetry and literature through performance poetry. We teach theater, and we kind of run the gambit. We also teach, you know, the prison industrial complex. We want our kids to be very clear about where they've been, where they're going, and all the possibilities involved. And we have an amazing teaching core staff that come from all over the country that come together to facilitate this work and believe wholeheartedly in it. So, yeah, it's very energizing. It's rejuvenating for us too to come together to create such beautiful work, you know, in a community that truly appreciates what we have to offer and that we can feel the difference in.
I'm curious about, you know, I think that this work sounds really powerful, and we know that education is hurting and students are hurting from, you know, funding deficits and you know, the lack of attention to special needs. What brought you into the work? I want to talk about you and sort of how you came into working with Lyrical Minded.
Well, I started out actually as one of the instructors. And then our founding artistic director is Breon Bain, who resides in New York, who actually founded this work in San Francisco Unified School District. And then after the pilot year, I became the artistic director of the program. It's been amazing and transformational for me. I've been a teaching artist for over 13 years. I believe in art, education, and activism, and I think that they all go hand in hand. I've made it kind of my life's mission to do this kind of work, and specifically in these kinds of populations. In fact, one of the things that I'm working on right now is trying to put together a teaching artist team to take to St. Croix in the U.S. Virgin Islands, because they have such a devastated kind of school district and community. And so what we're trying to do right now is raise funds and, you know, figure out the best way possible to go in and try to help service a community that is facing an even larger deficit than we are. You know, out of 8,000 of the students that attend school there, 100% of them are on free lunch, which, just to give you an idea of the socioeconomic standing there. Yeah, so we're looking forward to going in and trying out some of our pedagogical practices and theories that we've been using successfully here in the Bay Area and see how it translates there.
Sounds really great and really important work.
Yeah. We also want to go in with, you know, maybe 1,000 book bags or whatever kind of resources that we can gather, because we don't believe in insular like success. We want it to be a community success. We want to involve the community in whatever we're doing. So it's not just us coming in and doing our thing. You know, we like to look at social change and cultural change, community change, you know, and so that's what we're inviting to the table. And we want to include the community in the work that we're doing there as well, you know, as we would do anywhere else that we produce this kind of work. And I mean, Lyrical Minded isn't limited to the Bay Area. I just happen to oversee what happens in California.
Mm. Speaking of the art-based learning and how you might bring it into a new community like those in St. Croix, how might poetry specifically be a tool for assisting these students? Like, how might you get into, like, what you might do?
So, for instance, if we were teaching a history lesson, maybe, you know, one of the things that I'm working on right now is the Latimer Project. That's in terms of my personal work. Mm. And it's a project about Lewis Howard Latimer, who's my great uncle. He invented the filament of the light bulb and designed the patent with Alexander Graham Bell for the telephone. So teaching a history lesson like that through an assemblage project, which is something that I've been working on in my grad school program at Lesley University, using information about Latimer and the research that my grandfather actually began with and left kind of unfinished, I feel like, for me to finish. Hmm. And so collecting all of that kind of information, putting it together in a kind of a gallery piece, and then growing it into a larger theater production. I've started writing poetry around it, because it's a little known fact that he was a great poet as well, and using those kinds of things in order to teach the lesson. So we bring the assemblage in, you know, so if, for instance, we were teaching that's kind of a historical thing, you know, you bring in the art piece, you know, and each piece of reconditioned work is a representative of a different part of that historical journey. And so we have an open dialogue about that. And then I bring in the poem, you know, where I am, you know, performing a piece that is about what I've learned and what they've learned, you know, and then we expand it into, let's look at the legacies in your family, you know, tell me how we can build upon it. So then it becomes personal, you know, because I think it's important in education that we be as culturally relevant and socially relevant as possible in order to be successful. Mm-hmm. You know, we are teaching children that are going to retire in 2065, and you have to think about, what are you teaching now that is going to assist them then? What kind of building blocks are you creating for them to stand on, you know? Mm-hmm. What kind of foundation are you building? And yeah, right now, like, that is what progress really looks like.
Mm. It sounds like what I'm hearing is that you, through your own personal work and also what you bring to the students, you're encouraging them to think about lineage and think about, you know, the generations and sort of, you know, you're looking back to the ancestors, but you're also thinking about what's in the future and what are we imparting upon them right now and what are the impacts that they're going to have on the future. And ultimately, you know, this is all about storytelling. Mm-hmm. And it seems from what you're describing with your own personal work, and it seems so well integrated into what you're bringing to the classroom, that storytelling is at the heart of all of this.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see my personal project with the Latimer Project grow into a larger theater piece. But, you know, one of the things that we're working on in my classroom actually right now, my students are building their own legacy projects that will turn into theater pieces, you know. And so we're just taking it step by step, or starting with an ensemblage piece. And then they're talking to their, you know, family members and getting stories. And then they're going into the writing phase, and then they're going into a presentation. So, yeah.
I'm interested in talking a little bit more about your own personal work, and I think you've described what you're doing in your doctorate program. What else is going on your plate as an artist?
Well, you know, I'm in an MED program, but as an artist right now, I write docu-ritual drama theater, and my most recent work, Five Civilized Tribes from the Book of Corinne, went up in the National Queer Arts Festival in 2011, and that's a project that I also would like to, you know, continue to work on, and it's about I have a thing with history and documenting history, particularly at this point, my family history, and putting it in the context of a ritual and creating a drama theater performance from it. And that one in particular is about what was considered the five civilized tribes of Oklahoma, where during the Trail of Tears, there were five nations that were given an unfair exchange of land that they thought they would perish on. And in fact, they ended up striking oil and became very wealthy and assimilated. And so I'm talking a little bit about working on a piece around that journey, and I've done a solo performance around that, and I would like to continue working on that. You know, in my hosting life, you know, I host several queer events, mm-hmm. you know, San Francisco and Oakland Pride. I've hosted Good Times in Eden and, you know, a myriad of other mainstream events as well. I just want to continue to have a voice that is reputable in the community and to join in efforts that I feel are integral and make a profound statement, you know.
Yes.
I think that that's what's most important. You know, if you have the moment, if you have the mic, if you have the attention, mm-hmm. or if you have the gumption to go up and stand, mm-hmm. That I feel like we should really say something important and should take it, you know, seriously. I mean, because not everybody is given the opportunity to have a voice. And when you do have the privilege of that and having community, then I think you shouldn't take it lightly. I think you should have something true to say, yeah. or to show for it, even if it's just having a good time, you know, be clear about your intentions.
Yeah. Well, what I'm thinking about when we're speaking here around your docu-ritual theater and even the hosting that you do is that you're kind of claiming and holding down spaces of ritual in a sense. And I'm thinking about Sekou Sundiata because I'm currently reading and teaching him right now. And he yeah. talks about the ritual of how his poetry came out of being in the church and the call of response and mm-hmm. sort of how, you know, he couldn't conceive of a poem being isolated from the community and the response that happens in a real life setting. Mm-hmm. And in hosting events that I've seen you in and that and being in front of a classroom and kind of you facilitating and fostering this process of remembering, it seems that you're really instilling this idea and this experience of ritual.
You know, I'm from the deep, deep, dirty South. I am a Southern girl to my heart. So, you know, I came here from Louisiana, and I've lived a myriad of places in the South, but Louisiana, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, is where I call home. You know, I actually started the journey into docu-ritual drama theater after moving here after Hurricane Katrina. The show that has been most transformational for me that I've written thus far was New Orleans Anonymous, and just really chronicling the story of queer people in Louisiana and just the community at large. I think that a lot of things were left unsaid and a lot of heroes were left unsung. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of my homage to that entire experience, what it was like for me and what it was like for those around me, mm-hmm. what it was like for the community. And, you know, being a poet and being in the poetry community allowed me to have a lot of access to stories and people and documenting, you know, ordinarily you just wouldn't have record of. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I feel like everything I do, I take from the heart.
Yeah.
You know, it's very organic, and I tend not to engage in things that are arbitrary, you know, not put my energy and time to that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it ends up being something that I kind of end up having tunnel vision around as an artist, you know, and I like to use art and an activism as a teaching tool. Mm-hmm. I think that it makes it easier for people to remember,
yes,
you know, when they have
yes.
an experience
yes.
associated with it. And I think yeah. that's what performance work should be. It should be, yeah. for me anyway, it should be an experience.
So speaking of experience, we were going to hear some of your work.
Word.
And then we're going to kind of wrap it up, but please share with us and let us know which one you're going to share.
Okay, so this poem is entitled Mama's Lessons. 'Cause time keeps on slipping and I keep on living. With or without you, I'll be free. Mama says to me, you can do anything. With all the intensity in her face, in my six-year-old mind, I believed her. In my 10-year-old mind, I began to question, but in my 18-year-old mind, I demanded answers. She says to me, reach for the stars, Ramona. So I reached for the moon and considered Mars, but my fingers could not touch. She says to me, spread your wings and fly, baby. Fly, fly,
I ain't no bird, I ain't got no wings. Fly where? Above similes and metaphors and say what I really feel. Fly above the treetops of change and perch to watch the world go by. Pretend I'm not a poet. See, Mama never lied to me intentionally before, so I began to believe that maybe, just maybe, Mama was living in a dream. A facade, that which only exists in your mind, because apparently she hadn't seen my world in a while. Because the brothers on the blocks don't sell weed and crack rocks to their favorite pastime, believe prostitutes don't sell their bodies because they like sex, believe women don't have abortions because they hate their babies just that much, believe people don't commit suicide because love wasn't enough. Have faith, Ramona. Faith. You want me to have faith? Mama, you were doing better with belief. Mama, I don't know if you know this or not, but I live in a country built upon miseducation, governmental guides and eyes that only see what they want to, and it did not see me. And I'm afraid to say too much. See, I'm an amendment away from being 3/5 of a person and a signature away from voting, being taught to believe in a constitution that never included me. Mama, have you looked out your window lately? There are people walking around with Bin Laden, Been Living Too Long logos and t-shirts featuring Bin Laden's face with a target over it, and honestly believe that this too doesn't add to racism. Because see, first I see his face being targeted and then I see mine, a justification of racial profiling and outright racism. Freedom, Mama, is out of my touch like the moon. See, I believe my bills will come every month. I believe they will disconnect my stuff and kick me out if I don't pay on time. Heck, I used to believe that if I swam in the ocean while on my period, I'd be eaten by sharks. So exactly what type of belief are we talking about here, Mama? And she says to me, your struggle is nothing in the presence and greatness of God. God, God. Well, Mama, God is the only thing I do believe and put faith in. But, Mama, I didn't just go to church to find God. I found God in my heart, in my soul, in all that is or ever will be. Because for me, Mama, God is love. And, Mama, love is freedom. Thank you, Mama, for teaching me these things.
All right. All right. Thank you so much. That was beautiful, beautiful. And we want to kind of wrap up by hearing what's some things on your plate that you want us to keep our eyes out for, to check out some more of your wonderful work.
Oh, fantastic. Yes, come check out the San Francisco City Poetry Slam. It's second Sundays of every month. The next show will be October 14th. It's at the Luggage Store Art Gallery at 1007 Market, at the intersection of Market and 6th. It's 2 blocks from Powell Street, BART, 7 to 10. It's all ages and free Creole food, homemade by me, every second Sunday. And that is the venue that the San Francisco National Poetry Slam team comes out of as well. So, and I'll be featuring at Mills on October 2nd. So, those are the highlights.
Is there a site or a page or a profile we should keep an eye out for?
Oh, absolutely. You can check me out on Facebook. Okay. My Facebook name is just Mona Webb.
All right. Thank you so much, Mona. It's been a pleasure having you.
Thank you for inviting me. I've appreciated and enjoyed this experience.
All right. So this is Amy Suzara here with the poetry segment on Setting the Standard, KPFA 94.1. We're going to turn it back to Pedro Reyes with some music.